Welcome to the Growing Rural Podcast, where we focus on all things rural in South Carolina. We will discuss topics on healthcare, economy, education, and the unique culture that is our rural state. This podcast is supported by the South Carolina Center for Rural and Primary Healthcare. Please join us for today's topic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Growing Rural Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kevin Bennett. Today, we will be talking about access to healthy food and programs working to improve this. Our guests today are Ms. Beverly Wilson, the co-founder and executive director of FoodShare, and she is joined by Gabriel Wilhelm, their outreach coordinator. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
So tell us about FoodShare, who you are, and what all you guys do.
Sure. So I'm Beverly Wilson, and I started FoodShare about 5 years ago. It's an alternative healthy food distribution network where our families can purchase these great boxes of fresh produce. For those families using their SNAP EBT card, we actually help them pay for their box through some state funding that we have. It's an effort to help those families that are on SNAP to stretch those food dollars.
So when you say food box, what all is in this food
box?
Sure.
So it's a we call it a fresh food box. It's a box of 12 to 15 different items. About 40% of those are fruits and 60% vegetables. And we offer this opportunity to the community 27 times a year, so basically every other week.
So there's no prepackaged foods or prepared foods, or
it's fresh all fruit. Whole, uncut fruits and vegetables. We work with the with a vendor at the State Farmers Market to procure, you know, as much local and regional produce as we can. Obviously, we're not growing bananas and pineapples here, and we know that our families really enjoy those types of fruits. So we aim to buy as much local and regional as possible. But
so you have like a community development piece to that as well. You're buying from local South Carolina farmers.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Great. It's just a couple of weeks ago we had okra, and it was purchased from a farm in Chester.
Mm-hmm. Oh, great.
So we were excited about that. And then inside those boxes, we include recipe cards. Mm-hmm. And with that recipe card, we highlighted that farm in Chester so that people could be more aware of it.
And those cards will tell them how to prepare okra.
Right.
Not frying it, hopefully.
Right. Yeah. Baked okra fries.
There you go. Great. Yeah. So tell us how FoodShare got started. How did this idea come to being?
Sure. So for 15 years, I organized a bulk buying produce club in my neighborhood. And I, at the same time, was working at the medical school as a health educator and saw so many of our patients come in to our diabetes clinic. And, you know, our physicians would say, you know, you really need to cut out your processed foods, some of your carbs, your high sugars. And it just dawned on me in 2014 that this would be a great opportunity to replicate something like this wholesale bulk buying program for families who really needed it. Like the folks I was doing it for, it was just, it was not a necessity, you know.
It wasn't filling a gap.
Yeah, exactly.
Just a need.
Yeah, so we worked with our dean and leadership to launch a pilot back in 2015.
Okay.
And what we really wanted was a sustainable way for our families to access fresh fruits and vegetables, you know, like long term. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of our families will go to the food pantries, which are really meant to be emergency food pantries. But unfortunately, so many of our families actually use those, you know, those pantries as their way of shopping for food, and it's doing a lot of harm.
So outside of the SNAP or EBT program, they're going to food pantries to supplement that, or if they don't have SNAP benefits.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So where do your clients come from?
Gosh, all over. We have a lot of partners in the community, a lot of churches that we partner with, and we're, you know, about 5 years old, so a lot of the families that participate just have heard about us over the years. Mm-hmm. They come from 29203 zip code, 29223 zip code. These are zip codes that experience great disparities in health. And we try to focus our efforts in some of those high need areas.
And right now, how many boxes or clients are you serving?
We're packing about 400 boxes each packing week. Collectively, with the other food share hubs around the state, we're packing about over 1,000 boxes.
So every 2 weeks, you're doing about 1,000. So that's serving quite a few people, right?
Yeah, we are. And we, about 60% of those families purchasing those boxes are doing so using their SNAP EBT card.
Okay.
And we use that as a metric to make sure that we're serving those most in need.
Mm-hmm.
We want to see that number high. However, we recognize that we see participants come in all the time that make just a little bit too much money to qualify for SNAP.
Okay.
And we don't currently have a mechanism to match, you know.
So they have to pay out of pocket?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then, they pay $20.
Right. Which is still a pretty good deal.
Yeah, they're still
getting
about $40 worth of produce.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say we have a small box that's $15 cash or $5 on your SNAP, but the value of the box is closer to $30 worth of fruits and vegetables. And the same thing with that large box that's normally $20, you're getting closer to $40. So even though you may not be receiving those SNAP benefits, it's still a great mechanism for stretching that monthly food budget and making that go a little bit further.
So are most of the clients, would you say, even if they're SNAP or non-SNAP, food insecure, struggling to
I would say a good 95% of our, the only folks that are purchasing our boxes that are not, from vulnerable low-income families are our faculty and our staff that are purchasing boxes just to help and promote the program.
Right, right. So. And get some fresh fruit and vegetables on the side.
Exactly.
Right. I was just thinking that myself. I was like, I wonder if I should buy a box.
They definitely recognize the deal. But again, they're great supporters of ours in the doctor's offices. They may be purchasing their own box, but they have flyers up in their rooms. We get calls all the time. For their patients.
Okay.
We get calls all the time. Hey, I'm sitting here in the doctor's office and your flyer is on the back of our door here. Tell me more about the programs.
Right. That sounds good. Tell me about these clients of yours that are food insecure. What all does that mean? What is that? How does that affect their lives? And how does this help?
So what we've seen over the last 5 years is that hunger really is a symptom of poverty. Mm-hmm. So when you don't have the funds to purchase food, you fill your stomach with whatever you can find. And for, you know, many of our families, that's just cheap, you know, quick fast food.
Mm-hmm. The McDonald's hamburger.
Exactly.
Ramen noodles.
Yeah. And what we're seeing are devastating health effects.
High
blood pressure. We have children now, you know, that are 6 years old that have high blood pressure. Diabetes is, we haven't even seen the tip of the iceberg regarding diabetes in children in South Carolina. And, you know, so they're doing what they can.
Mm-hmm.
The good thing about food share program is when we offer a program like the food box component, people do take advantage of the opportunity. However, shortly after starting the program, what we found was that people would come back and be like, I don't know what to do with a butternut squash. And so,
I don't know what I would do with butternut squash.
Yeah, and, you know, I asked this one lady, Miss Essie, like, Miss Essie, what'd you do with your butternut squash last week? And she said she had put it on the table for decoration. And so we quickly realized that we needed to include a robust education component. So we developed our culinary medicine classes.
Okay.
And these are 8-week classes where families can come in at no cost and learn how to take the food they receive in their box and turn it into something that their children will actually eat.
Like the okra fries.
Okra fries, yeah. Yes. So
what do you do with the butternut squash?
Well, the challenge is our families don't own knives that are sharp enough to often cut them. So we've come up with some creative ways to show them how to, you know, poke a hole in the butternut squash so that it can breathe while you bake it whole. And then put a little Parmesan cheese, some roasted tomatoes on them.
You can also cube it, and then it would be a substitute for potatoes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like roasted.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Put anything on that? Garlic? I'm looking for recipes, yes. In case you can't tell.
We put garlic on everything.
Yeah.
If you go to our website, we have a whole list of our previous recipes and recipe cards that are in there. So
great.
Even if you're not getting a box that week and you don't have access to that particular recipe card, there's a whole catalog of previous recipes. But yes, we're big into garlic and peppers and onions and using more black pepper rather than salt and all kinds of other fun spices.
Right. And you teach that in this cooking course, basically.
Yeah, we do. Okay. We do. We've gotten a real educational cultural food ways. In the South, we're just, you know, what you bring to a potluck or to a church meeting or, you know, to Bible study Wednesday night says a lot about you, right? And so it's really tough to change some of those food ways. If you have, you know, if you're struggling with diabetes and high blood pressure, you are expected to continue to bring your macaroni and, you know, dish and your collards. And that has been a real struggle because our identities are so connected with our food ways.
Right, right.
Especially in the South.
Right. So what are some of the results that you have seen from your clients? You know, you've been doing this for, you said, 5 years almost now. So, you know, you've had enough time to see some outcomes, I would hope.
We have. Outcomes have been slow. Primarily because of what I mentioned earlier about, you know, food being very connected to who we are.
Right.
And having to help people understand, like, you can bring a really good collard dish to a potluck that hasn't, you know, been sitting in salt for the last 2 days. The greatest impact that we've seen, or health outcome that we've seen, was a decrease in blood pressure.
Okay.
Right out the gate with our culinary medicine classes, we saw significant decreases in blood pressure. Blood sugars, A1Cs, a lot slower to impact. But we've seen a lot of families that have increased the amount of fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
We've also seen a decrease in weight. This is all anecdotal information, but we've heard from a lot of participants that they've lost weight, they feel better. It's more sustainable because it's not just going home and eating kale, but it's actually eating, you know, kale sauteed with onions and garlic and maybe chipotle peppers.
Right. So it has some flavor.
We do a lot of spice building, a lot of flavor building using spices.
Okay. Interesting. So you're hearing a lot of quality of life improvements. And
yeah, but we've really had to do a lot of research on Southern food ways.
Right.
Because our families are not accustomed to eating cauliflower rice.
Right.
So we got to figure out how do we find a happy medium between, you know, mashed potatoes and cauliflower mashed potatoes.
And you guys are just supplying fruits and vegetables.
Right.
So you're not touching the meat side of things, which is often fried down here in the South, I've noticed. Or I'm not a fan of cheese. Everything down here is smothered in cheese. Yeah. So how are you addressing that? Are you?
We do. Through our culinary medicine classes, we spend the first 30 minutes talking about what contributes to high blood pressure. Like, where does your salt come from, right? It's not necessarily table salt. It's food that is already coming filled with salt.
Right.
And then how do we cook some of those recipes in a way that are flavorful, but without all the salt that contributes to the high blood pressure? And then they move into the kitchen for about 45 minutes. And we have about 20, 25 workstations where families can come in and they each get a recipe. And we have seen some interesting skills. We're just not, as a culture, we're not passing down those cooking skills like they did when, you know, your parents were raising you or my parents. Like, they taught us how to cook.
Right.
So we're having to go back and start with the basics. Like, this is how you hold a knife, right? Tuck your fingers in. So they spend about 45 minutes in the kitchen, and then we line up all that food on a buffet, and everybody samples the recipes that we've created, and they're all, for the most part, pleasantly surprised. And they're like, okay, this is doable.
Okay.
I could see how this would fit into my dinner
routine.
Yeah.
Sitting in on some of those classes, you hear the feedback from the people who are there. And one of the things I heard all the time was, one, I never thought I would eat any of this food.
Right.
And then when I did, I never thought it would taste good.
Mm-hmm.
And then a third component is that they're not just cooking those recipes in our kitchen now. They take those recipes back home, and a lot of them do get involved, get kids involved in
That's
helping
good.
Out there. And so I think it's starting to slowly turn the tide of not teaching kids how to cook or not teaching them to cook the right things in the right ways.
Right.
So that's what you kind of see is just it's generationally, you know, the kids have no control over what parents cook for dinner and what they bring home. And so now we're putting those fruits and vegetables in their home that weren't there before. And now you have kids growing up with, fruits and vegetables were in my life.
Yeah.
I love the way they taste, and they're going to pass that on to their kids as well.
Right. That makes a lot of sense. But it takes some time, as you said, to see the long-term outcomes.
Absolutely.
And the palate can be changed, you know. If you have eaten sweet candy food, you know, all your life, and then you eat an apple, that apple's not going to taste sweet to you or your children. So it's also about changing the palate. We talk about hijacking your palate. You know, if you're eating candy bars and high fructose corn syrup, you know, a grape or strawberry is not going to taste all that sweet.
It's so not we have filling to that need.
Train our palates,
So this program started in downtown Columbia.
Right.
So recently you've been expanding out into more rural areas, correct?
Correct.
So tell us what that is.
Sure. So we started in the mailroom at Palmetto Health Richland and moved into the Parks and Rec facility. And then a couple years ago, moved into a large grocery store, and we're continuing to expand. So we are really interested in working with partner organizations, nonprofits that are already working in the food access arena. So food pantries, any type of social service organization that is interested in improving food access, we would like for them to contact us. We've developed some really neat toolkits that basically give you the food share operating manual.
So you can implement the program.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of it's like a franchise in a box. But the cool thing about our program is we don't charge for it.
Mm-hmm.
Our goal, our motivation is to improve food access around our state and to equip partner organizations that want to take the model and implement it in a way that's beneficial to their community.
So a community group in a rural community
could
contact you, get the toolkit, and you could put them in place with farmers and your supply chains, and they could start up, get up and running.
Yeah. I mean, we are so interested in being in like Berkeley County, Williamsburg County, Kingstree, Chester, all those north. I mean, I think if you really name every county in South Carolina.
I think there's a need everywhere.
There's a need everywhere, Allendale. But what we need are organizations that are already doing some type of food work, food access or advocacy, that is interested in offering the food box program.
And then
we'll train you.
And these folks could also do the SNAP.
Absolutely, right. Absolutely. We would work with them to become a SNAP retailer.
Okay.
And then through our Healthy Bucks program, which is a state-funded program, we have significant money to match those boxes that are purchased using the SNAP EBT.
Okay. Yeah. So the investment would be relatively low for most of these groups.
Absolutely, yeah. We need... you know, cold storage is a tricky...
Like a freezer
kind of thing. Yeah, a refrigerator is really important, but through some of our grants, we can purchase those.
And if somebody has existing infrastructure somewhere.
And the churches are amazing. Like, in the South, we do church. I mean, we do life in the church. Have you noticed that since you've moved down here? Like, everything revolves around the church, especially in the rural communities. So the churches have been... very instrumental in opening doors. You know, they serve as partner sites. Many churches here will take orders from their congregation for food boxes. And then they'll come to our hub, pick those boxes up, and take them back to their community.
And distribute it that way.
Yeah. And then some churches will just open doors, you know, to other organizations that may be interested in shouldering the program, but we do some church in the South.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's interesting.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Definitely different from up north.
I was just going to say, cost-wise, like you said, if there's already infrastructure in place, if you've already got a large building, mm-hmm. if you've already got a group of volunteers who are potentially part of your congregation, and some of these larger churches have a big kitchen area that has a refrigerator or a large cold area space, then really the main cost is just to purchase the actual physical boxes and then load it up with the fruits and vegetables.
So a box or bag or some sort of container.
Yeah, so costs can tend to be very, very low for a partner site or a partner hub.
Which probably some churches would be willing to support them.
Yeah.
What are some of the challenges you've run across trying to get this out to rural areas?
Some of our challenges have also been some of our strengths. So challenges have been not having the organizations or the nonprofits doing any type of food work in some of these communities.
So there's not a group that's doing food insecurity or
on
the
radar. Some of our counties don't even have food pantries. So that's been a challenge, is finding someone that's doing work in the food access field, but also has the time to like take on a whole new program, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like starting a food box program while, you know, you start small and you grow. For, say, a busy clinic, that's like starting a whole new service line.
Right, yeah.
So that's been a challenge. The advantage has been for the rural counties, it's been easy to get to the decision makers, right? So if they do have a pantry or a clinic that's interested in coming on as a partner site or a partner hub, we can get to the decision maker pretty quickly.
Everybody knows who that is.
Yeah.
I think one of the other challenges is we just haven't had a rural coordinator in place within the organization. There's still plenty of growth possible in the Columbia metropolitan area. And I just came on in July, and you know, a big part of my role to begin with is just to learn about food share, what we do, and then help grow it here before I then take the program out to other places.
Right.
But this week I was just in Charleston at the South Carolina Office of Rural Health annual conference and made so many wonderful contacts. We were so appreciative of them inviting us to present there. Everyone that came by our table had either heard of Food Share or was really interested in our program. They were doing food access. So we met some great folks. Clemson Extension has their hands all over the rural community. You know, obviously they're a big agricultural school, but they want to get into some of the same counties we do, so Lee County and Marion County and Hampton County, some of these places that are kind of far away from metropolitan areas. So made some great contacts there, and if everything comes to fruition now, I'll be busy for a long time.
Right, which is what you want.
Absolutely.
That's right.
That's good. That's good. So tell us a little bit more about the Orangeburg Hub, how that got started, and what's unique about that.
Sure. We have been working with folks in Orangeburg for about 2 years now, trying to figure out where a hub can sit. So who can take orders, who can fulfill those orders? And we have finally landed with the library in Orangeburg, which from what I am understanding, like the whole community revolves around the library. They're very active. Jim Johnson with the university there has received some grant funding and hired a coordinator. So we will be launching the food box program in Orangeburg next week, actually. Community residents can place their order for a food box at the library, and we will be working with Jim and his team to order food from the state farmers market to fulfill those boxes. So
Will they pick up at the library as
they
well?
They will pick up from the library. We really need some refrigeration. We need like a reefer truck. So that's probably one of our greatest needs in Orangeburg right now is
somewhere to store the food.
Somewhere to store the food. I think that's really going to take off in Orangeburg. So what we're also looking for in Orangeburg are partner sites. So if you are in and around Orangeburg and you run a clinic or a pantry or a church where you would be interested in taking orders from your community and then sending those orders into the library, and then Jim and his team will fulfill those orders. And so we use a hub and spoke model. Okay. So he needs more spokes
to feed into the
Orangeburg, needs more partner sites that can take orders from the community.
It is a unique place in that some of our other hubs are farms or there's a group called Ruth's Gleanings in Spartanburg. So to be in the library was really cool. When we went down there and visited and walked in the door, like, you could tell this was a place that community members want to come to, and they are really trying to connect their community with all the other resources, and then now food access has become an additional resource for them. But Anna, who's the director of the Orangeburg County Library, is really, really excited about our program. So the whole month of October, we're kind of doing a soft opening in that we talk with members of the library, family members, friends, to just start getting that box order in, see what it's like to process those orders. So we'll do those for the first 2 weeks in October and then really, really start marketing and getting it out to the community with the November boxes, which is great because it's right as the holidays are approaching.
Right, that'll come in handy.
The key to replicating any of these programs in our rural areas is top-down leadership. And people always ask, like, you know, do you go out and actively sell food share? We wait for, at least for the last 5 years, we've waited for interested organizations to come to us because we want you to be on fire for food share. There's so much involved in becoming a partner site and taking this on that you have to be on fire for this program and for food access in your community. So top-down leadership
is
so key.
You're looking for that champion to move that forward.
Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to beg you to do, you know, your part. We there's so much that we're already doing to get that box filled that we need you to come to us and be like, we want this for our community. And then we'll equip you.
Right. You got it ready to go.
We got it.
Which is exciting as well with Orangeburg that Bamberg County has also quickly learned about what's going on in Orangeburg. And they've gotten a group of folks together, including the mayor and their food policy councils, and they want to bring everything to Bamberg as well. So I think we're going to start with Orangeburg serving Bamberg, but it could be that in the very near future, Bamberg becomes a food partner hub. And again, if we could be in every county, there's a rural aspect in every county in South Carolina, maybe outside of Richland, but even Lexington County has a whole half that's rural.
It's pretty rural. Right.
So if we could get into every county, we'd be very, very happy.
So are there any other programs or activities you guys have your hands in?
One of our most recent program offerings that we've come up with is called Good Food Markets. And this is a way of really expanding the food share program without expanding our workforce. So we received some funding from an anonymous donor here in Columbia, and we are taking that funding and putting it back into communities. So organizations, neighborhoods, anyone interested in starting their own farmers market can apply to us. We will, if they're chosen or selected, meaning they have the right ingredients, you know, to launch a market, we'll give them a $500 scholarship to place their first wholesale food box, not food box, their first, let me back up. If selected, we will give them $500 scholarship to place their first produce order, their first wholesale produce order. And then we will train them how to run their own markets. And these are not food box, you know, markets,
but just a stand
like a produce market.
To sell the produce they bought with the scholarship.
Gotcha. So if there are organizations, individuals that want to learn how to do their own market, we have a link on our website called Good Food Markets and the application, and we really want to grow this program.
Okay. So we've talked about some of the challenges with working in rural areas and some of their shortcomings, but tell me, with your work, what have you seen that's been positive and good about these rural communities?
I might refer back to the conference that I was at this week, just seeing how those communities come together. They're passionate about the people that they live around. And so I think that's very positive for us, because as we try and reach out to those communities, we're like, hey, here's a way that you can continue to help your folks. But just the camaraderie, the sense of community, the love that people have for each other, I think that's a huge part of the rural background. Everyone knows everyone. So they know the people who are in need. They know the people who can help supply for those needs. And so just, it's a very tight-knit group. Again, that everybody knows everybody. So they know the people who are most in need of help and actually want to be part of the solution. So that's, I think, a huge piece of the positivity with rural communities.
I ask this of all the guests. So there are numerous definitions of rural that are in use in different places. But what is your definition of rural? How do you understand rural to be, especially in South Carolina?
I understand it basically anything outside of the urban area. A lot of people think rural, they think farms. They think there's nothing around. And we've found that in several of our counties. In Allendale County, there's not a single grocery store in the whole county. And I think someone who lives in Columbia or someone lives in Lexington would be shocked to know that, especially if you live, there's a corner in Lexington where there's a grocery store on every single corner of that intersection. And so to find out that there's people in South Carolina that have no access whatsoever. In Lee County, I believe there's two grocery stores. Some people live 14 miles away or more from a grocery store. So rural there is just, you don't have the same access to amenities and resources that someone in an urban area does. Looking at the South Carolina Rural Health Action Plan, they kind of define it with more U.S. Census Bureau information. And so if you look at that map, if you're not Columbia, Lexington, Charleston, Spartanburg, Greenville, Rock Hill, Florence, everything else in the state is rural.
Rural if you have to plan your grocery trip, right? Grocery store closes at 5:30 on the weekday, 12 o'clock on Saturday. You got to plan that trip. And you also know you're rural if you have to describe three or four surrounding cities when you're telling someone where you're from.
The triangulation.
Yes.
I hadn't thought about that one.
I love
That's
that one. Yes. I grew up in rural North Carolina. And when we went grocery shopping, we took all four kids because everybody had a buggy. And we went once a month, which is bizarre. We also had a garden, so but we went once a month. Every kid had a buggy, and it was full.
Loaded up for the for the duration. Well, thank you both. This has been very informative, and appreciate you telling us all about Food Share and your programs and food insecurity. Like I said, we'll put links to this information, your website and various programs in our show notes so folks can find you. And if you all are interested in talking to Beverly or Gabe about setting up a program, reach out to them. I'm sure they'd love to hear from you. And that's all for today. Stay tuned for more episodes coming out soon. If you have ideas for guests that you'd like to hear on our program, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening to the Growing Rural Podcast. If you found the content valuable, please leave a rating on iTunes or Spotify so others can find us. For more information, please visit our website at sc.edu/ruralhealthcare or follow us on Twitter at sc_CRPH. This was recorded at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine in Columbia. It is edited and produced by Sean Riffle. Y'all take care.